Shalom Aleichem, Chavra. This is Binyamin Hammer from the National Council of Young Israel. I'd like to welcome all the Rabbanim and Balabatim that are on this call, and particularly to welcome Rebbe, who usually we start in September, El time, but we're here a day earlier for conference call number 94. Thank you, Rebbe.
You're very welcome. Clearly, almost all the questions relate to the upcoming Rosh Hashanah. We'll try to answer the questions. Some of them seem repetitive, but each one has a slightly different nuance. The first, number one, the Tzomen Institute has an infrared thermometer that they say can be used on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Do I feel that this is a halachically acceptable option? And here is a link to the Tzomen explanation. I looked up the explanation. Tzomen is a very wonderful group. They write in their introductory remarks, it was founded by someone who was in Keren B'Avon in my time, Rabbi Yisroel Rosen, Zichrono Livracha. Now his leadership was assumed by Rabbi Perel Shalita. But they write in their introduction that they're pioneering new types of devices for the purpose of individuals who are not well or for purpose of security, the Israeli army and police. But they concede that in other circumstances, it's difficult to rely on the leniencies which they have worked out. And of course, before we even begin to discuss what they said, the question is, this infrared thermometer, how important is it that we should even begin to discuss it? Here's, as you may know, is a dispute among the various doctors. I'm told that Dr. Fauci, who is considered the number one expert, thinks that these temperature checks are not very useful. Others disagree. And that leaves us in a bit of a predicament. My feeling is that what they're relying on, it's based upon a type of a grumma, the same kind of idea of concept they use for many other things that they sponsor. Without going into details, they have their own wheelchair, they have their own lift, many things that they have with grumma. My Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, did not feel that this is necessarily grumma. Rav Shechter Shlita has written about it. That does not necessarily fit into the grumma as we understand it. I have clear different opinions what grumma is or is not. And therefore, my feeling is, if the shul is so concerned about health that they want everyone's temperature should be taken, that instead of having a Jewish person do it, they should have a Nachri, an Eni Yehudi. Then we can say, if he's doing it, so then we have different heterim, heterim of, Kshus to Shus to Malcolm Tzorech. There's apparently a need for it, according to some. My shul has opened. We don't take temperatures. The doctors did not ask to take temperatures. If they did, we would do it. We have a security guard. He would do it. As a matter of fact, if we come to Erev Rosh Hashanah and the situation demands temperature checks, we will have it done by the Nachri. So, but to do for the Yisrael himself, I believe it's something which has not been accepted here in our part of the world. I know the Ibn Eretz Yisrael is quite controversial. I'm not here to say yes or no, just pointing out that here, as a rule, we have not accepted these grumma devices, even the better ones that are produced by Tzomet. Question two. My shul is having an issue with regards to outdoor minyanim on Shabbos and not being able to hear the Baal Tefillah. It has led to suggestions such as using a Tzomet microphone. Please discuss using it for Shabbos Yom Tov, particularly in these circumstances. This is a very serious issue that goes back many decades already. These kinds of microphones, which, again, it goes back a very long time. They try to do it in a way which obviates most of the prohibitions. You're aware that Rav Moshe is a tshuva about microphones. He has two potentially surim d'oraisa and two certainly surim d'rabbanan, for which he's very much against microphones. Of course, one can quibble with everything that's written here and there. There's always find another side to each issue. At the same time, in America, as far as I know, in the vast, vast majority of shuls, These tone microphones are not used, even though there may be a need for them in a very large shul, things of this nature. Only a few outlying synagogues have it. And again, they may have put it in because before they had a regular microphone, which was an issue maybe 90 years ago. Certain towns, they had it for many years. Maybe they still do. But it's been accepted since my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik came out against microphones almost 70 years ago that we don't use them. And even the Soma ones we don't use. There was once an issue of air microphones about 30 years ago. We don't use those either. We are not prone to using microphones on Shabbos Yom Tov at all. And if, as far as this particular year, makes no difference. Find a Baal Tefillah with a loud voice. There are such Baal Tefillah. There are loud voices which can be heard even outdoors without a microphone. It's the best suggestion that I can give. Number three divides into many parts. A, B, C, D, E, and F. So really, it's really six different questions. That jumps the number from 14 to 19, but okay. At BEH, we'll be holding Minya this year for the Yom Outdoors in Aventura, Florida. There'll be a tent and fans. However, our attendees are mostly elderly in the Florida summer heat. My main concern, despite the obvious social distancing practices, is to know what parts of the tefillah can be significantly shortened or omitted. I'm specifying this as being asked by the board and the overlying consensus from our elderly crowd, who will commit to attending only if we can create a significantly shorter visit to shul. Regarding Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, what segments of davening can be omitted? Should we be starting from Mishtabach? Which Mizmorim during the Amida can be modified? What segments of it can be omitted entirely? On Yom Kippur, should we say or skip any of the Slichos Aviduyim? I will refuse to speak about Yom Kippur until after Rosh Hashanah, because Rosh Hashanah is going to be the big experiment for Yom Kippur, and there are Seres Yom Tshuva, including 7 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, only one being Shabbos. So there's opportunities to move quickly once we see how Rosh Hashanah went. Of course, some of the preliminaries and the planning will happen before Rosh Hashanah, but I'm not ready to comment on them at the present time. Let's stick with Rosh Hashanah itself. These are very, very serious, serious questions. To play with a machzer is not so simple. We have regular davening for so many years, the same davening that we're used to. So making changes is really so much against the grain of any traditional person who cherishes and anticipates the traditional Rosh Hashanah davening. Very difficult to start cutting things out. Nonetheless, there may be an actual medical concern. Florida summer heat is a medical concern. Now, there are other concerns that, according to some doctors, simply the longer the exposure, there's an increase in the risk. Of course, that's something which is hard to quantify. But that would be another reason to curtail the length of the davening on Rosh Hashanah. In addition, people say I can only keep a mask on for a certain amount of time, not longer than that. Okay, that's right. I've heard it before. And finally, in some shuls, because they cannot open to capacity, for either legal reasons or medical reasons or both, they have to have multiple minyanim. And there may be a need to have multiple minyanim staggered in the same place, one after the other. So for all these reasons, it may be necessary to curtail the davening. So, you know, I guess it depends how long the davening was before you start curtailing it. Everyone has their own memories of how long davening typically is. So I can only give an example from my own shul. My own shul is called Young Israel of Riverdale, where I've been the Rav and the Baal Musaf since 1974, so quite a few years of experience there. And I will tell you what I plan to do. Again, these are plans as of, what should I say, Erev Rosh Chodesh Elul, a month before Erev Rosh Hashanah. So things can change. but I'm only speaking in the present tense, and one cannot predict the future. So the question was raised, the first thing was raised, the very first question, should we be starting from Yishtabach? That's an excellent question. It really is a great question. I believe in my shul that we will do something along those lines. So typically we begin davening at 7:15, and we start with Adon Olam, and there's a Shir HaKavod, and Shir Shoyom, and El David, and Adon Olam, and Yigdal, and Birchas HaShachar, and all the special Nigim, and even the Pesukah Dezimra said slowly in a special Nigim. Typically it takes us to get to what we call HaMelech, which is the way where the Baal Shachar gets up to daven, takes us 40, 45 minutes to get that far. And therefore, that adds a lot, relatively speaking, to the length of the service, which it should be avoided. And we should know that we should be very careful whenever we can make it a little shorter, to make it a little shorter. So therefore, what I'm proposing, and we'll see if it comes out that way at the end, I can't guarantee it, that we'll still start at 7:15, but instead of starting with the Shir Shel Shir HaKavod and the Shir Shel Yom and the Ledavid and the very special tunes for Adon Olam and for Yigdal and for the Birchas HaShachar and for the Karbonis and for the Pesukah Dezimra, I think we're probably going to omit all of that and begin later, but not at Yishtabach, because as Rav Shech the Shalita has ruled, you can find it in his Pesukim on the Corona. I have them on Torah Web, where they can be found, among other places, where he explained that you can't start at Yishtabach, because Yishtabach is the middle of a bracha. The bracha begins with Nishmas. So I plan to begin at Nishmas. Nishmas is the beginning of the bracha, which ends with Yishtabach, and go from there. Where will the people, the individuals, say from the beginning of the davening of their ma'azah all the way until Nishmas? Can't answer that question. Some will want to do it in shul. Some will want to do it at home to limit the time that they're going to spend in shul. Either way, before Nishmas, you're in the middle of Pesukah Dezimra. It's not as bad as being in the middle of a bracha, but still, so person should be advised, whether he's just in his seat or he's walking from home, should not be mafsik b'dibur, should not speak at that point in time. From the moment you start Baruch Shama until Yishtabach, you're not supposed to speak. But if he's doing it at home, he can walk quietly to shul and be there at the appointed time for Nishmas. You'll tell me, well, maybe we should not quite follow what this Rav asked to begin at Yishtabach, maybe we should begin after Yishtabach. You look at the Shulchan Aruch, you will see that after Yishtabach is less of a problem than before Yishtabach. That can be seen in the Mishnah Berurah, Simen, the Shulchan Aruch, really. Simen Nun Dalet Siv Gimel in the Mishnah Berurah Vav says as much. However, it seems to me that our primary responsibility in any curtailing of the Magzah on Rosh Hashanah, or what is said publicly on Rosh Hashanah, is to maintain the Rosh Hashanah experience with all of its glorious tradition. I would not want to cut out the famous traditional haunting melody which accompanies HaMelech when the Baal Shachar gets up to say HaMelech. There are all stories of people fainting and other stories. We don't want to cut that out. So I believe, although from the perspective of Hefz, it would be better to start after Yishtabach, we're going to start before Yishtabach, but it doesn't mean before, it means before Nishmas. Because Nishmas and Yishtabach are together, based on Sugim Sachim. So therefore, the tentative plan for us is to do exactly what this Rav suggested, with a slight deviation. Instead of starting from Yishtabach, we'll start from Nishmas, and we'll encourage everybody to either say it at home or say it in shul, a smaller crowd, either event, not to speak the moment they start Baruch Shama until we have to Shemon Esrei, and it's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. That's the first. Next, which Mizmorim during the Amidah, during I guess, and the mistake, during the Amida can be modified. Well, the word modified is a hard word. You probably mean omitted. What can you leave out? Now, taking scissors and cutting out things from a Shema Magzer is not a pleasant task. Nonetheless, given the emergency nature, it's too dangerous to sit for the hours at many shuls. My shul, typically, first day Rosh Hashanah can go 6 hours, from 7:15 to 1:15. That's typical. People can't sit that long because they're afraid of a high risk, as we said before, or perhaps they're davening outdoors and it's too hot to stay that far. They stay there that long, Aventura, Florida being a case in point. Or perhaps they can't wear masks for that long, they can't sit for that long. Or, in some cases, perhaps even in my shul, though at the present time I don't think so, there may be a need for a second minyan in the same site some hours later. So unless you get up and down for seeking, it's not gonna go if you dive into full davening. So therefore, I was asked, basically, to reduce the davening. It's true, Rabbi Shechner Shaliter wrote something, you daven in 2 hours, from beginning to the end. Technically, of course, it's true. But after I spoke to him, I told him that you're going to remove the entire Rosh Hashanah experience. You just say every word without any heart, any soul, any crying, any singing, anything. Just say the words, mumble the words. If you say every word clearly, do it in 2 hours. You've eviscerated the entire Rosh Hashanah davening. Try better davening at home. So he understood what I said. Now I'm trying to do it in 3 hours, which is still a mighty task, since it usually takes 6 hours to get it down to three. It's challenging. And I said three for a variety of reasons. The doctors are divided as to whether it's safe to stay longer than that, and it should not be imposed upon people. Those who want it limited to 2 hours, and I respect that. Those who don't come to shul at all, I respect that also. If you want it limited to 2 hours, I tell the person, just come an hour late. You'll come to laning, beginning or middle of laning. You want to wait outdoors till laning begins. And you stay from laning to the end. Will be about 2 hours. I can't give it, nothing is guaranteed over here. It's all an experiment. So you can daven shachas v'yechidu. So daven shachas in some outdoor minyan near his house, in the backyard, for those who want to have the 2 hours. And that's Rabbi Flug Shlita from Boca wrote a whole chart with a system which I can't fully grasp how to time it properly, but that's for those who want to do 2 hours. I'm trying to do it in 3 hours. But you have to cut a lot of things out. If it takes six, well, what you have to cut? What are you going to cut out? So I told you we already cut out 3/4 of an hour by starting at Nishmas. That's about 40 minutes that we cut out. Again, every day is a little bit different, but it's giving an average. That would already take away approximately 40 minutes. That's not omitting anything. We're not omitting or modifying. All we're doing is telling people to daven at home, or if they're more comfortable to daven in shul, but privately, till the appointed time when we will begin with Nishmas to be followed shortly after the by HaMelech. Now, when you say modified, how do you modify? What it merely means, what segments can be omitted entirely. That's what it really means. And then there are segments that can be omitted entirely. And the question is, which ones are they? So I have a mouth in front of me to be able to follow along for the purpose of this year. I brought my mouth. And the Rosh Hashanah Mavza is very big Mavza. And I'm going to open it up now and tell you what I think. But you first have to understand where I'm coming from. I'm coming from an understanding that the Rosh Hashanah experience, as I mentioned earlier, is the most important thing to preserve. It must be preserved at all costs. This doesn't mean that omitting anything doesn't detract from the experience. Of course, even one line, one paragraph detracts. But everything is relative. We begin with a citation of the Rambam in Siman Tov Resh Yud Tes Sif Aleph, quote, Sa'al yishaneh adam yimineh ha'ir afilu b'nigunim or b'piyutim shavim sham. Don't change from the custom even with the tombs or with the piyutim that are set over there. And the Mishnah Berurah there, Tzivkon Zayin explains, K'ayah deizeh meval bel da'as hakol. You're confusing people. They're used to their nigunim, they're used to their piyutim. You start making changes, you will confuse them. And if you won't confuse them, you'll disappoint them. They're waiting for this. In my view, again, I've a lot of experience as a Baal Tfila. I'm usually not in the audience for Musaf. I'm in the Omen. Shachas, I'm in the audience, as it were. I found that there are two types of piyutim which I do not want to omit. The ones that we sing, because that gives people a certain level of transcendence, and they're exalted, and they're feeling a very, very high level of spirituality. And the ones that the people cry, or said with great devotion. That is my general approach to this difficult and painful responsibility to start taking things out of a mouth, which is truly terrible. But, you know, the lesser of the evils, I believe, is omitting some of the literary masterpieces that we typically say on Rosh Hashanah, which are authored on the first day by Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. My Rebbe said that Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, there's no piyutim for the second day Rosh Hashanah, indicated to my Rebbe that he would live at a time when they kept only one day Rosh Hashanah in Eretz Yisrael, which according to Rambam was about 500 years, the period of the Savarim and the Gaonim, when there weren't that many B'nai Torah, as the Rambam puts it in his own words, the Melchamas, the beginning of the Sefta Beitza. So it could be he kept only one day until the Rift came and made a revolution to go bring the 2 days in Eretz Yisrael, which we have, of course, since then. So that's Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. The other famous Paitan is Rabbi Shimon ben Yitzchak, Rabbi Shimon HaGodol, as he's known, in the 10th century, maybe into the 11th, long, long time ago, he lived, and he was talking, you know, 1,000 years ago. He wrote many of the piyutim for the second day Shacharis. It's very long. Some of them are transposed on Shabbos and Sunday. So that's a detail. No shofar on Shabbos. But those piyutim, as beautiful as they are, and as poetic, and as literary, and as steeped, based on Chazal, or Rabbi Elazar HaKalir has in one paragraph 10 different allusions to different midrashim and gemaras, and everything. Beautiful. I recommend to people, it's so beautiful, say it at home, learn it at home, you can learn it with the English if you want. Get these piyutim, you can start already the night, Erev Rosh Hashanah at night, I mean Friday night this year, Leil Rosh Hashanah, you can do more on Shabbos morning or Shabbos afternoon, first day Rosh Hashanah, it's on the second day. Worthwhile learning, studying, even reciting, but because of the time considerations, I believe that unless things change dramatically, we'll have to omit those piyutim, except for the ones that we sing or that we say with devotion. So to be specific, comes to Shacharis, I think we're going to leave it only a total of 2 piyutim. That's all. What are the 2 piyutim? So the one that we sing, which is found in every mouth that I know about. Again, I'm not an expert on all Mazor, but this is a tune which I know we sing in our shul. I still think that most shuls do the same. Atu Elokeinu b'shamayim v'aretz, Gibor v'naretz. That's a very beautiful tune that we sing to it. Togol Mervavo, Safayeh, everyone has their own nusach. It starts with Yimloch and Chai v'kayim. This one fills up less than a page on my mafza that we will say. And then we'll go to the Kehla Rechdin. So just before Kedusha, skipping an awful lot. Shemelech, HaShemelech, skipping all those things. We say, V'chein l'cha kol yachtiru, the Kehla Rechdin, and then V'chein l'cha sala Kedusha, go straight to Kedusha. So we're saying 2 piyutim with their intros and with their conclusions. Here it's the 2 V'chein. And when it comes to the other one, we said, there's also an intro before that. That starts with Yimloch and Chai V'Kayim. It's really just saying 2 things. And of course, once we do that, we go to Kedusha. There's nothing to skip after that. After Kedusha, it's all the same as the private citizen says. We're not skipping that. But I still believe it's skipping so many pages, you'll gain a lot of time. Again, it's painful for me. I think people should be encouraged to study these piyutim at home. There's plenty of time for Shulam the davening. I have 3 extra hours to study the piyutim at home, whether before or after. Everyone should be encouraged to do so, even to recite the piyutim if that will be to a spiritual awakening. But to say them all is simply, in a year like this, I do not believe that, at least in some circumstances, we should do it. Of course, the fear is that next year, Rabbi, you left our last, and say, lift the lid on this. You have to fear with all corona leniencies. We've spoken about it in the past. You have to keep emphasizing this only because we call it Shas HaTzchah Godol, and there's no expectation to do something like this next year. Okay, this is the question as we are continuing to read it. Okay. B. How should we determine if you should have a Shulam davening or not? If you're Shulam in the davening, what is the order of things that should be skipped? A. Piyutim. B. Blowing more than 30 kolos. C. Singing. So I told you, in my opinion, singing is critical. Now, some of the doctors are worried about singing, so you don't have to sing at full voice. You have to be wearing a mask, that's for sure. Social distancing. And if you're afraid that you're too many aerosols, I was told it's better to hum than to sing with your mouth wide open. Okay, it still can achieve a certain measure of the spirit of Rosh Hashanah, even if there's a smaller crowd. For example, in my shul, I'm just giving round numbers, we have a capacity of about 200 people. We were over 200 last Rosh Hashanah. This year, you may recall, the governor said only 1/4 capacity. He was sued, and the judge ruled 1/2 capacity, the same as businesses. We are going to attempt, as much as possible, to follow the governor's original, stricter provisions, namely to have only 1/4, which is 50 people. We may increase our capacity somewhat by having people who come from the same house sit together. There's no need for them to stay apart. They're always together. If we do that, it's possible to be able to gain some more seats. We thought we can gain a significant number based on 3 or 4 or 5 or even just 2 people from a family sitting together. So therefore, our capacity will increase to some extent. But again, there'll be enough people there if they sing without screaming. It'll be loud enough to give the spirit of Rosh Hashanah, not loud, too loud to create danger. More than 30 kolos, sorry, you need 60 kolos. 30, what we call Tkiyas Demiyusha, it's hard to cut that out, that's such an ancient tradition. And then 30 more in Chazaras HaShas, we call them Uma. Yes, there's a minig of 60 kolos, that's absolutely true. The minig of 60 kolos, to my knowledge, is not found in the Shulchan Aruch. If you look in the Mishnah Brura, Simin, Tav Kuf, Tav Kuf Tzadivav, Siv Beis, I believe you'll find it nowhere in the Shulchan Aruch, but the Mishnah Brura, Siv Katan Beis, does mention it from the Shalom HaKadosh. And of course, we like to keep Minhagim. So if it's necessary to omit it, one may omit it. In the alternative, the people can walk out of the shul, we're finished davening, and maybe another group is moving in, or who knows what. And then outdoors, you can blow the 40 kolos. All doctors seem to agree that all things being equal, outdoors is safer than indoors, in the perspective of the COVID-19. So the last 40 kolos can be blown outdoors. I was asked even the first 60 can be blown towards the outdoors. The answer is yes. People think it's too dangerous. The aerosols with the spreading with the blowing of the shovel of Baltikir should be Texas for COVID Erev Yontif, or Erev Yontif. That's a worthwhile precaution. But you never know. So the Baltikir can stand near the window, near the door, and blow out. It's still possible. You're still hearing the Kol HaShofar. And therefore, that may be a solution in certain cases. But nevertheless, you need 30 kolos. The beginning of 30 kolos for Chazaras HaShas, the last 40 are not that much required. C, for families that cannot come to a full davening, is it appropriate to have shorter services outside for them? This to blow in the shofar, what does the Rav suggest doing at the service? Can prioritize what the field is going to be skipped, should not be skipped, but trying to reduce the time people are together in shul. Again, obviously it depends upon the doctors. If you need 2 consecutive, you only one after the other. All depends. I believe that 3 hours can do it if I leave out many things. One, let's start it at Nishmas. Two, what else comes next? What comes next, which will be left out, is the, what we call it, the many Mishaberechs that are said. We have a rule, Mishaberech, the shul typically is only one Kshur Mishaberech. Yom Naram, you can throw in anybody you want. It goes very long. It's a very nice idea. A Shoshana, you want to pray for some members of the extended family. It's beautiful. But this year we're going to plan to cut that out. And we mentioned before the very long Negunim of Shachos we hope to cut out. And yes, rabbis, if you follow me, you'll cut out your drasha too. I don't plan to speak. Maybe 1 minute to explain. But I was told that in some shuls, they come only 2-3 times a year, and if you don't speak, they don't understand Hebrew. It's a disaster. That's a judgment call that has to be made by every rabbi in his own turf. But I plan, at the present time, not to speak. And if you want to hear me speak, then I'm coming to Mincha Maariv. There's a shorter service, all three, Friday, and then Shabbos, and then Sunday. All much shorter than the Rosh Hashanah, what we call Shachas Musaf Davening. Okay. If it remains as today, infection below 1%, Rabbanim should be reducing the length of davening and Yom Haroyim by removing Piyutim. Yeah, I planned it. Again, things can change between now and then. But even if it's 1%, I'm telling you direct stories. Direct, not just Baba Mises. Where there was a wedding, and the mother and the son were at the wedding, and there were no masks. And they tested positive, which is a serious, serious problem. The other case I was involved in, a little closer to home, was a shiva I went to for a relative, and I was wearing a mask. I was surprised the other person was not wearing a mask. And then a very distinguished Rav walked in on Friday, Fenichem Avelim, just Friday, that's 5 days ago. Fenichem Avelim, neither wearing masks, there for 15 or more minutes, right in front of the oval. And the question was raised, can the man go to shul? Because he's just out of shiva. Can he take kaddish? The answer is absolutely not. He's exposed. He went for a test yesterday. I hope the tests are negative today. Hope so. But there's still a danger of catching it, and worse, the danger of spreading it. It's less than it used to be, unquestionably. But there's still a risk out there. And therefore, I believe we should shorten the davening for the reasons which you mentioned earlier with a clear understanding it's just for this year and this year only. And the next question, should there be any changes made in the Mea Kolos? Would any difference if it was blown during the Sa'ad Amida? If you blew during the Sa'ad Amida, you already have 90 Kolos before you start. There's almost nothing to talk about. If not, so there's the last 40, which I think can be either omitted or set out, blown outside, if and when that's appropriate. F, my shul is still not opening for women and children. Should we, for Yom Haroyim? I think the answer is for women, yes, absolutely. Women have such an important role to play in our communal tefillahs. They don't count for minyan, but they count in Shemayim, that's for sure. And their heartfelt tefillahs are very, very, very important. And they should be encouraged to come to shul again safely, of course. And nothing is to be done to discourage them, even in the slightest. And that's as far as women are concerned. Children is a different story. Children, most children under Bar Bat Mitzvah cannot sit still for a long time in one place, which is no good ever, and Kavah Chomer this year is no good. You don't want children running around. So I said that they should only have children come to shul, they can sit with their parents straight through. How old is that? 12, maybe 11. Depends how old the child is. But parents have to make that responsible decisions. Okay, this finally concludes question number 3. Now we got a question number 4. Is the first kolos are done outside, should I be makbid, the men and women are separated? The answer is yes. This is shofar. This is not some small piece of the davening. May not be considered a tefillah proper, but it's appropriate that they should be separated for this holy moment. 5. Someone comes to davening but refuses to follow protocol and wear a mask over their face. May they be restricted from davening to kill shofar? Absolutely yes. Absolutely yes. If the rav of the shul, with the medical experts feel, someone who's in shul without a mask presents a danger to himself and to others. Guys, I'm sorry, can't come in. Can't come in. I was told that there's some people that they can't handle masks, they're too old, etc. somebody made them, to call it, an enclosed case, basically. You're totally enclosed by windows, and that way you're completely safe, you know. If a person doesn't want to wear a mask, maybe you can give him a sukkah, which is a glass to which he can see, and it doesn't spread any bacteria. You cover it with a roof, perhaps. Whatever. But you have to be safe. Number six. Under normal circumstances, when an engaged couple spend Shabbos together in each other's community to meet their future family, each person stays in a different house. Correct. Given the current COVID-19 situation, are there any ways for them to stay in the same house with Gedorim, such as someone sleeping in each of their rooms or something like that? The answer is yes. That's a minig. It's a very good minig not to stay in the same house. But it's only a minig, and if Corona dictates it, all the way it could be done. If they're in the same house, they should be far away from each other as possible in the same house. But it may be done in a pinch. Next question. Number seven. What to tell people who are out of work since March, who sublease space for their parnassus, such as a barber who rents a chair in a barber shop, same with a shaitlemacher who rents a chair in a salon. The salon owners are claiming that they themselves have to pay the full rent mortgage to the full price of their arrangement should be paid, even though the sublease was not allowed to work because of government order. The landlords are also claiming that they have the rent to spot in the shop, and that the tenants informed them they could have found another tenant. All right. These are all claims. I'm not passing judgment on claims which have to have two sides. Suffice it to say, it's not a simple question. And I always say to people, you have monetary claims, wait till after the immediate danger is gone. You can focus on money. Right now, I think it's premature to try to answer these questions. I don't think so. And also, you need two sides to every question. The two reasons why I don't want to discuss it now. Eight, after consultation with a local medical expert on infectious diseases, are opening up group to start to resume services with protocols which include no congregational singing, a shorter service, and no mingling after the service. This is causing some frustrations from a few balabatim, especially given that those protocols aren't being followed at all by other local shuls. A few balabatim aren't attending anymore because they want a more regular service with singing and want the opportunity to socialize after the service. Some people attending have insisted on making their own kiddush right outside the building after davening. Oy. On the other hand, at least one attendee, a doctor, is uncomfortable with the fact that people aren't following the protocols. The question is twofold. Is it proper to be cautious for this danger to the degree as advised by the epidemiologist? Second, to what degree is it necessary to protest when people aren't following the protocols? In my opinion, the medical expert is correct. If he says it's dangerous. He must follow the protocols. The person should be asked to leave if he's not wearing a mask. Unless he has his own private chamber, as I mentioned earlier. But he's endangering others, he's also endangering himself. So this is something which I believe should not be accepted. Again, I'm assuming the doctor that the shul is following, the rabbi's doctor, the shul's doctor, is confirming what I'm saying, that without these masking and or social distance, it could be problematic. Now, details I can't hammer out here. Every city, every state, every situation is different. But things change by the day. Give you the general guidelines. If there are certain protocols put into place by the rabbanim, after consulting with the medical experts, guy can't come and say, Kimley, I have a different medical expert. I want to do it this way, the other way. I don't think it works. The shul has to have one rav and one expert that advises them. And if you have a different expert, it's too bad. You have to be machmir. As we have at Din Shulchan Aruch, there are different experts saying opposite things. It's been known to happen a long time ago. Okay. Nine. So I believe the situation remains as it is today, where the infection rate is below 1%. Rabbanim should be... I think we had this question already. Okay. Again, it depends on what's happening over Rosh Hashanah. We plan to shorten it. As a matter of fact, if you wait a week, or before then, there's a plan to actually print a mazzer for Tishrei, for Rosh Hashanah, Tumshin Payal, just a separate mazzer. Have we taken out all the pews that we spoke about, leaving in the ones that we spoke about? It's a new month. It may come out next week already, even though Rosh Hashanah is a full month away. But people are very antsy. Again, if it comes out, it's just my suggestions. It's only one person. I have no right to play with the traditional month. It's a Malcolm Shane Anoshim was there to do so, so I did so. people can feel free to add or subtract as they feel is appropriate. Okay, number 10. Should the mouth of the shofar be covered during tkiyas? Can one put a cover on top of the shofar to minimize germs spreading? If a man comes to a woman's shofar belongs, she's about to tkiyas, do 100 blasts. Can one recite yizkor at home alone? Many different questions. So the first question means as follows. You say a cover on the top or a cover on the mouth. If you mean the mouth where the Baal Tkiyah puts his mouth, you may not put anything between the Baal Tkiyah's mouth and the shofar. It's not allowed. You can't do that. Now, there are some doctors who are saying it's dangerous with so much aerosols and so many particles, whatever other words are being used, to describe the danger of COVID-19 spread. Again, I'm not far from an expert in this field, but I was told that it is an issue with the shofar because the shofar spreads out many aerosols, and therefore the Baal Tkiyah should be checked before Rosh Hashanah, to the best of my knowledge, to make sure that he's healthy. Again, things can change in a minute, but we don't know. We have to do the best we can. And these other suggestions, you have to be careful. If you put it at the mouth, it's puzzle. There should be nothing between the mouth of the Baal Tkiyah and the, quote, mouth of the shofar. So that's out. That's out. It doesn't work. A cover on top of the shofar, that's a different story. Here, it depends if it changes the cold or doesn't change the cold. This didn't sound in the Shulchan Aruch. We've never looked at these simanim. It never happens to us, really. But this year it's happening. If it's happening, we have to rise to the occasion and pass it correctly. So this halacha is found in everyone's standard Shulchan Aruch with Mishnah Berurah. I assume you all have it. And there it says that if the sound changes appreciably, but what you put on the outside, it's no good. Serious problem. I was told by some who experimented that if you put a very tight seal with a rubber band around the mask that people wear out these days, that can alter the sound. But if it's a loose fitting, then it would not alter the sound. I'll leave it up to every rub himself to do an experiment. If it doesn't change the sound, it's presumably okay. Does change the sound? Presumably not. Look in Shulchan Aruch, Shimon. Tov kuf pei vav sif katan zayin. If it changes, it's puzzle. Seems that if you cover with a tight seal of your name, with the rabbi's name, that will likely change the sound, which is the problem. But if you just say, I'm happy to, again, I don't put it on so tight with a rubber band. Just put it on loose, maybe tying the strings of the mask that you have there anyway, around, I was told that that does not change the sound. Again, you have to experiment with each shofar which you're covering, but that's the rule. If it changes the sound, it's a problem. If it doesn't change the sound, then it's okay. Let's go on. 100 blasts. Again, no. Should not do 100 blasts for women's show, but just only do 30. The man who came, too bad. Yisker alone is yes. We discussed the Pesach and Shavuot already. 11. I heard the name of Rav Shach Lashlita. Tell me the Ron Machazen can daven with one minion and lead Chazaras Hashat with a second minion. Is this also an option with the second minion of the Hechik Kedusha? I would say the answer to that question is no. The answer to Rav Shechel's question, I believe, as was mentioned here, is yes. One can serve as a chazan more than once. I believe that's correct. Rav Shechel said it on his own. He said he didn't have any sforum. He didn't look it up. Thanks to our librarian, I was able to track two sources for this, River of Ephraim, Rabbi Greenblatt, and Chelik Beis, and Pei Gimel, and Chelik Dalet, and Dalet says it's okay. And the Divrei Yaakov, of Adas, and Brochus Chafalach of Manav says that he asked many Bali Hara, and they all said it's obvious that it's okay. Even though the Mishnah Berurah that the Rav Shech and others quote, he thinks it's not a full proof, But without a proof, there's no reason why it shouldn't work. That's what I thought as well on my own. I don't see why not. I may be such a shliach tzibur. I may daven musaf and two consecutive minyanim, or may daven shachas and then musaf and two concurrent minyanim. Who knows? It's not easy to daven twice, but you have to do what you have to do it. So we shall see. We assume it's permissible. 12. Oh, and finally, after all this, we're getting off Corona and off Rosh Hashanah, to my knowledge. A little over a week ago, we had a fire in my apartment building on Shabbos. At the time, people didn't know what to do. Eventually, a neighbor came into the home where the fire was and put it out. Was it the correct thing to do when a fire starts in home on Shabbos? I heard one is supposed to try and put out the fire by pouring liquid nearby so that the fire extinguishes itself when it reaches the water. That's the Pasuk of Grama. Is that right? Yes, among Shabbos Kuf Chaf. Will it make a difference if the home is in an apartment, attached house, or outside the home? Yes. If it's connected, it's completely because of danger to others who are sleeping. You can't wake them in time. You can't sleep in time. So in many of our circumstances, it's a pikuach nefesh mamish, which case you just do what has to be done. If not, then not. But most cases in today's world are. 14. Our program is to make a cookies and cream and cookie dough flavored ice cream. To go from the sublime to the ridiculous. But I guess ice cream is important. And I don't know what these things are really. I think it's my instinct tells me that the main thing is the ice cream and the cookies and cream is just a small amount. Cookie dough is a small amount. And you can just have in mind to be yotzi with the shakal on the ice cream to be yotzi everything. That's what I would suggest. I can't say for sure how buttle it is, but that's my understanding. Of course, the counterpoint is when it comes to minim mezonos, haymin and chamesh minim, we don't apply the principle of batel b'ro, but this is even better than a ro. This is some considered to be batel, let's say be'etza. Finally, 14. On a hot Friday morning in August, someone's central air conditioning unit broke and he called the repair service. He was told that the serviceman would come at sometime that day. The day was passing with no serviceman in sight. Hey, may the Gentile serviceman be allowed to work at the house after Shabbos comes in. B, can the husband accept early Shabbos and allow the service to be done if his wife has not yet accepted Shabbos? C, the serviceman arrived 10 minutes before Shkia and while trying to fix things caused all electricity on this bottom floor to go out. Maybe allow him to do work to fix the situation during Bein HaShemashos or later. All good questions. Bein HaShemashos is okay. That's Beferish and Shulchan Aruch. Bein HaShemashos, you're allowed to have a mule and achri. So that's okay. How you define Bein HaShemashos is a little bit of a problem. Some say it's 15 minutes, a half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour. Different opinions. I just gave a stamp to a few. There are many others in between. Whatever you usually keep for Bein HaShemashos, for different reasons, that's the Bein HaShemashos now. Now, this is very important. Beyond that, it's already a major problem. If it's Bikuach Nefesh, Chol HaShesh Posakana Avada, it's permissible. Maybe the people who are in the house, they know electricity. There's somebody in the building that has medicines after you refrigerate. You can think of cases where the medicine is critical to the upkeep of the home. Might even reach a level of a pikuach nefesh. If not, it's what's called Chol HaShe'en Bo Sakana. Chol HaShe'en Bo Sakana, you can do things that we call a shinui. It's true the Mechaber sounds like only the Rabbanan's b'shinui. If you look at the original source of the Ramban, and you should look in the, I believe it's the Ritva, it's quite clear that even the rice is b'shinui, may be done for Chol HaShe'en Bo Sakana. Mechaber, probably based on the Rashba, disagrees, but the original source of this whole thing is the Ramban, and that's what he says, so we can even do the raisa potentially if you're stuck in it with a shinui. The Shmir Shabbos quotes both of these opinions. I'm opting for the more lenient one. Okay, now, if the husband's accepting Shabbos, and what about the wife has not yet accepted Shabbos? Seems to me that accepting Shabbos is no more strict than Ben HaShemashos. Ben HaShemashos is going to ask a non-Jew to do work, so much more so, where you have accepted a private Kabbalah Shabbos before the sun sets. Finally, the servicemen try to fix things. Everything went out. Can you fix the situation? Ben HaShemashos alive. Of course, they should aim for Ben HaShemashos. Hurry him up. Quickly fix this. It's important you do this right now. Otherwise, I'm in trouble. At the end of the day, if he could not fix it in Ben HaShemashos, here too, an argument can be made. Depends on the scope of what went out. The scope went out a number of houses, and there could be a chola sheyesh basakana in one of those houses, maybe even ein basakana. So you'll have to ask the nachri to fix it, because everything depends upon his fixing. This is a consideration which, of course, every situation has to be, figured out. Is there or is there not? Is there or is there not? Again, to a nachri, it's always mutter for any chol Hashem basakana is before the Shulchan Aruch. And the first issue of the woman with the Tosefa Shabbos, Pashas can't be any more strict than Ben Hashmash is proper, could be even more lenient than Ben Hashmash is proper, and therefore his Kabbalah Shabbos does not affect her. I think that's true in all cases, not just the Corona. And vice versa, her acceptance does not constrain him in any way. This is what I think. There are many, many other questions that have been raised and will be raised before Rosh Hashanah, Habole, and Latova. Perhaps there'll be opportunities for me to address them in subsequent shiurim. I want to thank all the Rabbanim who, even before Rosh Chodesh Elul, already worrying about Rosh Hashanah. Thank you very much.
Rebbe, thank you very much. Gittin Chodesh to all the Rabbanim, to Rebbe, and we hope, Bezrat Hashem, we can call upon Rebbe soon.
Thank you.
Take care, everybody. Thank you.
Bye-bye.